Chapter 16. Anne lay awake for hours that night, and several nights thereafter, thinking about Alden and Stella. She had a feeling that Stella thought longingly about marriage, a home, babies. She had begged one night to be allowed to give Rilla her bath. "It's so delightful to bathe her plump, dimpled little body." And again, shyly, "It's so lovely, Mrs. Blythe, to have little darling velvet arms stretched out to you. Babies are so right, aren't they?" It would be a shame if a grouchy father should prevent the blossoming of those secret hopes. It would be an ideal marriage. But how could it be brought about, with everybody concerned a bit stubborn and contrary? For the stubbornness and contrariness were not all on the old folks' side. Anne suspected that both Alden and Stella had a streak of it. This required an entirely different technique from any previous affair. In the nick of time, Anne remembered Dovey's father. Anne tilted her chin and went at it. Alden and Stella, she considered, were as good as married from that hour. There was no time to be lost. Alden, who lived at the harbor head and went to the Anglican church over the harbor, had not even met Stella Chase as yet, perhaps had not even seen her. He had not been dangling after any girl for some months, but he might begin at any moment. Mrs. Janet Swift of the Upper Glen had a very handsome niece visiting her, and Alden was always after the new girls. The first thing to do, then, was to have Alden and Stella meet. How was this to be managed? It must be brought about in some way absolutely innocent in appearance. Anne racked her brains, but could think of nothing more original than giving a party and inviting them both. She did not altogether like the idea. It was hot weather for a party, and the Four Winds young people were such romps. Anne knew Susan would never consent to a party without practically house-cleaning Ingleside from attic to cellar, and Susan was feeling the heat this summer. But a good cause demands sacrifices. Jen Pringle, B.A., had written that she was coming for a long-promised visit to Ingleside, and that would be the very excuse for a party. Luck seemed to be on her side. Jen came. The invitations were sent out. Susan gave Ingleside its overhauling. She and Anne did all the cooking for the party themselves in the heart of a heat wave. Anne was woefully tired the night before the party. The heat had been terrible. Jem was sick in bed with an attack of what Anne secretly feared was appendicitis, though Gilbert lightly dismissed it as only green apples. And the shrimp had been nearly scalded to death when Jen Pringle, trying to help Susan, knocked a pan of hot water off the stove on him. Every bone in Anne's body ached. Her head ached, her feet ached, her eyes ached. Jen had gone with a group of young fry to see the lighthouse, telling Anne to go right to bed. But instead of going to bed, she sat out on the veranda in the dampness that followed the afternoon's thunderstorm, and talked to Alden Churchill, who had called to get some medicine for his mother's bronchitis, but would not go into the house. Anne thought it was a heaven-sent opportunity, for she wanted very much to have a talk with him. They were quite good friends, since Alden often called on a similar errand. Alden sat on the veranda step with his bare head thrown back against the post. He was, as Anne always thought, a very handsome fellow, tall and broad-shouldered, with a marble-white face that never tanned, vivid blue eyes, and a stiff, upstanding brush of inky black hair. He had a laughing voice and a nice, deferential way, which women of all ages liked. He had gone to Queen's for 3 years, and had thought of going to Redmond, but his mother refused to let him go, alleging biblical reasons, and Alden had settled down contentedly enough on the farm. He liked farming, he told Anne. It was free, out of doors, independent work. He had his mother's knack of making money and his father's attractive personality. It was no wonder he was considered something of a matrimonial prize. "Alden, I want to ask a favor of you," said Anne winningly. "Will you do it for me?"
"Sure, Mrs. Blythe," he answered heartily. "Just name it. You know I'd do anything for you."
Alden was really very fond of Mrs. Blythe and would really have done a good deal for her.
"I'm afraid it will bore you," said Anne anxiously, "but it's just this. I want you to see that Stella Chase has a good time at my party tomorrow night. I'm so afraid she won't. She doesn't know many young people around here yet. Most of them are younger than she is, at least the boys are. Ask her to dance and see that she isn't left alone and out of things. She's so shy with strangers. I do want her to have a good time."
"Oh, I'll do my best," said Alden readily.
"But you mustn't fall in love with her, you know," warned Anne, laughing carefully.
"Have a heart, Mrs. Blythe. Why not?"
"Well," confidently, "I think Mr. Paxton of Lowbridge has taken quite a fancy to her."
"That conceited young coxcomb!" exploded Alden with unexpected warmth.
Anne looked mild rebuke.
"Why, Alden, I'm told he is a very nice young man. It's only that kind of a man who would have any chance with Stella's father, you know."
"That's so," said Alden, relapsing into his indifference.
"Yes, and I don't know if even he would. I understand Mr. Chase thinks there is nobody good enough for Stella. I'm afraid a plain farmer wouldn't have a look in. So I don't want you to make trouble for yourself falling in love with a girl you could never get. I'm just dropping a friendly warning. I'm sure your mother would think as I do."
"Oh, thanks. What sort of a girl is she, anyhow? Looks good?"
"Well, I admit she isn't a beauty. I like Stella very much, but she's a little pale and retiring, not overly strong. But I'm told Mr. Paxton has money of his own. To my thinking, it would be an ideal match, and I don't want anyone to spoil it."
"Why didn't you invite Mr. Paxton to your spree and tell him to give your Stella a good time?" demanded Alden rather truculently.
"You know a minister wouldn't come to a dance, Alden. Now, don't be cranky, and do see that Stella has a nice time."
"Oh, I'll see that she has a rip-roaring time. Good night, Mrs. Blythe."
Alden swung off abruptly. Left alone, Anne laughed. "Now, if I know anything of human nature, that boy will sail right in to show the world he can get Stella if he wants her, in spite of anybody. He rose right to my bait about the minister. But I suppose I'm in for a bad night with this headache."
She had a bad night, complicated by what Susan called a crick in the neck, and felt about as brilliant as gray flannel in the morning. But in the evening she was a gay and gallant hostess. The party was a success. Everybody seemed to have a good time. Stella certainly had. Alden saw to it almost too zealously for good form, Anne thought. It was going a bit strong for a first meeting that Alden should whisk Stella off to a dim corner of the veranda after supper and keep her there for an hour. But on the whole, Anne was satisfied when she thought things over the next morning. To be sure, the dining room carpet has been practically ruined by 2 spilled saucerfuls of ice cream and a plate of cake being ground into it. Gilbert's grandmother's Bristol glass candlesticks had been smashed to smithereens. Somebody had upset a pitcher full of rainwater in the spare room, which had soaked down and discolored the library ceiling in a tragic fashion. The tassels were half torn off the Chesterfield. Susan's big Boston fern, the pride of her heart, had apparently been sat upon by some large and heavy person. But on the credit side of the ledger was the fact that, unless all signs failed, Alden had fallen for Stella. Anne thought the balance was in her favor. Local gossip within the next few weeks confirmed this view. It became increasingly evident that Alden was hooked. But what about Stella? Anne did not think Stella was the sort of girl to fall too ripely into any man's outstretched hand. She had a spice of her father's contrariness, which in her worked out as a charming independence. Again, luck befriended a worried matchmaker. Stella came to see the Ingleside Delphiniums one evening, and afterwards they sat on the veranda and talked. Stella Chase was a pale, slender thing, rather shy but intensely sweet. She had a soft cloud of pale gold hair and wood-brown eyes. Anne thought it was her eyelashes did the trick, for she was not really pretty. They were unbelievably long, and when she lifted them and dropped them, it did things to masculine hearts. She had a certain distinction of manner which made her seem a little older than her 24 years, and a nose that might be decidedly aquiline in later life.
"I've been hearing things about you, Stella," said Anne, shaking a finger at her, "and I don't know if I liked them. Will you forgive me for saying that I wonder if Alden Churchill is just the right beau for you?"
Stella turned a startled face.
"Why, I thought you liked Alden, Mrs. Blythe." "I do like him, but, well, you see, he has the reputation of being very fickle. I'm told no girl can hold him long. A good many have tried and failed. I'd hate to see you left like this if his fancy veered."
"I think you are mistaken about Alden, Mrs. Blythe," said Stella slowly.
"I hope so, Stella. If you were a different type, now bouncing and jolly like Eileen Swift—" "Oh, well, I must be going home," said Stella vaguely. "Father will be lonely."
When she had gone, Anne laughed again.
"I rather think Stella has gone away secretly vowing that she will show meddlesome friends that she can hold Alden, and that no Eileen Swift shall ever get her claws on him. That little toss of her head and that sudden flush on her cheeks told me that. So much for the young folks. I'm afraid the older ones will be tougher nuts to crack."